Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening once again, and welcome to Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely, she is the mysterious, she is the mystical.
It's me.
Lynn Nickerson. And I keep forgetting you're on three tonight for some reason.
There we go.
Yeah,
hi, Willie.
Good evening. How are you?
And what was your name again?
Willie.
I'm forgetting about you, too.
You're forgetting about me. Well, you know, when you switch mics, you got to tell me. You know,
and you've never made a mistake, huh?
I didn't say that. We have to share our mistakes
so
that we're on the same page, that's all.
Well, now.
So how are you tonight?
It's just fine, thanks.
Oh, that's good. I got a question for you.
And what's that?
What is really going on in the mountains of North Carolina?
I'm not absolutely sure, but I do know that there's someone who can tell us.
I think you're right. Secret underground bases, national park rangers carrying machine guns, foreign military troops in our national parks, and UFOs appearing out of mountaintops and lakes. Tonight's guest, Mary Joyce, joins us to shed some light on the truth behind these mysteries. Through her website, skyshipsovercaches.com, Mary has been investigating all sorts of strange phenomena, from UFOs to Bigfoot to secret military operations in the North Carolina area. In her newest book, Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains, Mary exposes the truth about what is going on right under our noses in some of our national parks and state parks, such as Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Mount Mitchell State Park, Blue Ridge Parkway, and more, with information gathered from those with military, law enforcement, and high security clearance backgrounds. Mary brings to the public some of the truth about what our government is trying to hide from us. So tonight, for her second appearance on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, let us please welcome to the show Mary Joyce. Good evening, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi there. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Pretty good.
So glad to have you back.
Can you turn up the volume?
Let's see. We're having a little trouble tonight here.
We can give it a little tweak there. How's that?
Is that better?
That helps. Thank you.
Okay.
Is it me that's a little low? Mary, can you hear me?
What?
Is it my voice that's a little low?
Your voice is low, too.
Okay, we'll see if we can rectify that.
Talk loud.
There we go.
That's all.
That's much better. I don't know how many people are familiar with your website, but it's really It's excellent. It's got all of these current events and news stories that focus on unusual and controversial subjects. And you're so fortunate that people trust you to send out this information to other people. And I think it's really essential that the public gets to know this stuff. So your book is wonderful. The basis, you know, we've listened to several radio shows, your interviews, and really interesting stuff. And there was a couple of the bases that you didn't get a chance to touch on very much. And one of them was, well, the Devil's Courthouse Rock along the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Right.
Would you like to start there in telling us some of the events that take place?
At the Devil's Courthouse?
Right.
Okay. It's right along the Blue Ridge Parkway. And the facility is beneath that and to the west of it, maybe in other directions also. We got information from two different people with high security clearance who told us that it's a facility that's six stories deep, city size, completely self-sufficient with electricity and water and everything you need to survive underground. Of the five different ones that I wrote about in the book, it seems to be the oldest, and it was originally a Cold War facility where they did monitoring of the sky and with the satellites and things of that nature, and eventually, when the Cold War supposedly ended, it's been turned over to, supposedly, again, an educational institution.
Isn't that the Perry Center, Mary?
Into astronomy and things like that, but the activity is still going on beneath the ground. And even from Devil's Courthouse, we had a former sheriff who one day was up there, or one night up there, taking a drive in his convertible, and he stopped at that pull-off, and he felt some vibration beneath the ground, and he put his ear up to the rock, and he could hear mechanical sounds coming from beneath the ground in a place where there shouldn't be anything at all. So that's the oldest facility of the ones that I wrote about.
Now, you said the Perry Center, right? Is that the same thing?
Here it's known as the Perry Center, P-A-R-I. It stands for Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute.
So is that the same thing as the Devil's Courthouse Rock?
It's just to the west of there. But obviously beneath it also. The entrance
is beneath
the Perry facility.
Okay. Oh, very unusual stuff. Was this the one?
Len, talk right into the phone. I don't know why I have trouble when I connect with you guys.
I'm on another mic tonight. I'm wondering if that might have something to do with it.
I don't know. But anyhow.
I'll try to raise my voice.
Because otherwise I cannot hear you.
Sure. How about sightings of UFOs in this area?
There are sightings and have been reported since we started the Skyship website, which was back in 2008. And, you know, those sightings have never stopped. We've also gotten reports of the ships flying into a nearby lake that's just to the west of there, you know, in and out of there. So it seems to be, you know, a different kind of entrance into the place. But there's UFOs of different sizes and shapes and colors and everything that are flying over that area. One man who is a retired professor with the university, he used to report on these on a regular basis, and when he did, he began to have interference with his computer to the point where he won't talk about it anymore because it got too expensive.
Yeah, that's a shame.
But one of the sites that people might be more familiar with throughout the country would be the one under the Smoky Mountain National Park.
Okay.
And we had a really wonderful whistleblower who came to us. He has a military background. His wife has military background. He's very observant, and he sometimes had a camera with him, so he got shots that I have in the book. And his whole story is fascinating. It started when he just happened to observe a very long tractor-trailer truck with a very odd piece of equipment on the back, which he said looked like a decontamination chamber. Mm-hmm. And he went up and talked to the driver, and it was a woman, and she said she didn't know what was on the back, but it was for the Air Force. And she was waiting there for five other tractor-trailer trucks to arrive and for their escorts. So he and his wife waited around just to see them all come, and the escorts were men dressed in black outfits with, they were well-armed. And he and his wife followed this caravan because the woman had told them that they were taking the equipment to a location in the Newfound Gap, which is the road that you would take between North Carolina and Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And then it was going to be airlifted to an unknown location. So they followed at a distance, and this caravan pulled into a campground called Smoke Mount. And then the gate was closed after that, and they couldn't go any further. But he is he's experienced so many things, and he has known other people who have, too. He's had friends that took ATV rides back into the park,
mm-hmm.
and they were stopped by park rangers with machine guns. And as you know, park rangers aren't supposed to be armed, especially with machine guns.
Yeah, there is something a little strange there.
That's very true.
And he got pictures of the big, giant Osprey helicopters, and they would take big cargo packages and drop them off. And he got two pictures of those. Again, they're in the book. He got another one when there were six different very large cargo planes flying out from low in the park, and as they were flying off, the back tailgates were in the process of closing, so they had just made a drop.
Yeah.
There's no airport there. They're just dropping things from the air.
Lending off supplies. Goodness. You know, I lived in Sedona for a while, for about 9 years, and there's this one section, many, many national trails and national parks, but in Sedona there's a place called Secret Canyon area, and it's open to the public because it's a national park, and yet I've heard many stories of people being stopped by men swinging off faces of stone, dressed as ninja in ninja uniforms.
Oh, well.
Carrying machine guns. So
not that different.
Not that different. Carrot, North Carolina is not the only place, and they would be stopped. These people who would be just, you know, public hikers would be escorted out of the canyon because there always seemed to be some kind of government maneuvers going on, and people complain, and the complaints go nowhere. But then again,
when I first moved to North Carolina, which was in 1998, it wasn't too long after that that I began to hear things from hikers and hunters and the people that would get into the backwoods.
Right.
And they would say they would see Russian and German and UN troops doing maneuvers back in the deep woods. And everybody wondered why that was happening and why it was being allowed. I finally found out that in 1972, our government signed the World Heritage Treaty. This was during the Nixon administration.
Mm-hmm.
And in that treaty, we signed over, as a country, signed over some of our national parks and forests to the United Nations. So even though the Smoky Mountain National Park is in our country, it is under the jurisdiction of the UN.
We've lost our sovereignty there.
I know. And whenever I have an opportunity, I like to mention that because hopefully somebody who has some clout might be able to start steps to get us out of such a treaty because
it does not seem right.
Is the whole park that you know under the UN, or is it just a certain sections of it?
It's the whole park.
The whole park. Wow.
And, you know, the locals have to kind of laugh at what's going on there. Since they started obvious building of something under the ground there, they now have the park as a no-fly zone.
Oh, and really?
The reason, they say, is so that the planes won't disturb the elk because they're trying to
breeding.
reintroduce the elk into the park.
Uh-huh.
Well, I want you to know that 2 days ago I was over on the road that takes you through the park, And by the visitor center, there were 28 elk. And all the tourists were pulling off to the sides of the road to get pictures. So obviously they're not scared off by the sound of cars, planes, and things like that. It's just the biggest bogus excuse I've ever heard.
Such a ruse.
I don't think we really believe that one.
No. Oh, I know. It's ridiculous.
Mary, how do you suppose this World Heritage Treaty got pushed through? Probably just on the end of another bill, right?
That part I do not know. I suppose they started out with the idea that they wanted to preserve these really special places around the world because it goes beyond our country.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I do have a map in the book that shows the locations of these World Heritage sites that are in our country. I didn't put in one for the whole world, but I did, for the U.S.
I'm wondering how something like that can get rescinded. Just write your congressman?
I don't know. Do you think Congress works?
No.
I mean, what other resort do we have? It's just awful.
I think that would be the only way to do it. And I don't know. Some of these people are very good about getting petitions going on the Internet where they get enough signatures that, you know, they have to pay attention at least to some degree to the request.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a way to go. The Congress is certainly a way to go.
And some money in the right pockets.
Maybe Trump is the one to talk to.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm beginning to think that he's got some hope. He's so independent and bold.
That's his appeal, because we're sick and tired of...
Exactly.
Politicians.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned the Perry Center, and I'm not sure now if I'm confusing this, but where was it that they were talking about the alien weaponry and mine, memory banks being erased?
It's that one.
It's that one.
The darkest thing seemed to be going on at the Perry Center. Many, many years ago, one of the whistleblowers was a young man at that time, and he was working in a nearby Christmas tree farm. And the people that worked there would sometimes see animals in cages being taken into this place. Why?
Yeah, why?
You know, that sounds like
experimentation
of some kind.
Laboratory.
At a personal level, whenever I've gotten close to that place, and there's this, I'm sure it's an electromagnetic energy that's being sent out, but it makes your head feel a little weird. And until you get away from it, that feeling doesn't go away. That's also been reported near the one in the Smoky Mountain National Park, which at the time that they were really heavy into the construction, when people got close, they would feel that kind of sensation. One of the witnesses said it got to the point where it actually, created a bit of nausea.
Yeah.
And as they were driving up to the road that's as close as you can get to where we think the entrance is, it was a beautiful day, and driving halfway up, there's birds, and everything is alive, and it's a beautiful day. And when they got real close to it, there were no birds, there were no sounds, and there was this a lot of mechanical sounds coming from beneath the ground.
Mm.
It was described as like, when you make a bridge and you pound the big pylons into the ground,
mm-hmm.
it sounded like that.
Well, you know, it harkens back to the Taos hum. I think there's something going on there, too, and it drives people crazy. Some people have to move away.
Right, and that may be, there can be many reasons for that, but that certainly can be one of them.
Yeah.
One of the stories that I included in the book was a couple, it was the woman who told us, but for just a short amount of time, maybe a several days, they were feeling vibrations and sounds from beneath the ground beneath their house, and they're up on a ridge, and then it stopped. This is in the same area where we suspect that what I call an underground subway system has been built.
Mm.
And if any of your listeners have seen pictures of these underground boring machines,
they're huge.
They're cylinder shape, very big, bigger than a train, and they can just plow through the earth at a rate of about 7 miles a day. And so some of these transportation systems connecting these underground facilities could easily be created that way.
And what is it doing to the environment? I mean, it's just...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
What is it doing to the environment? It's just setting up the scene for an earthquake or something equally tragic.
Right, and it's just like with the fracking.
Yes.
Getting earthquakes sometimes where the fracking's being done. If you keep digging up and, you know, tearing things up down beneath our feet, things have got to shift.
Yeah, the stress, yeah. And it's got to balance out.
You can only take out so much before it collapses.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Mary. You were going to say something?
I was just going to tell you that a little bit about the Mount Mitchell site.
Yeah.
And the whistleblower on that case is a man who retired from the medical field, and he'd also been a medic during during the Vietnam War. When he retired, he still had lots of energy, and he went to volunteer to be in the medical unit for the National Guard here in North Carolina. They found out that he had Army clearance and FBI clearance, and they put him to work doing surveillance around Mount Mitchell. And he was put in charge of a squad of men, and the forest around Mount Mitchell is very dense. And they went in there, and they followed animal trails, and their assignment was to surveil the mountain. And they saw what he calls blue hats coming out of the backside of the mountain, and they came out in a line, but then they broke up into four sets of men, in two men in each set.
Mm-hmm.
And one would go down the north side, or one would go down the south side. All sides of the mountain were covered, and they would follow old animal trails. Now, the squad was following these UN blue hats from a distance, and the one guy would, in each group or set, would be carrying this huge backpack, the kind that's reinforced with metal, and the other one would be the lead, and he would be carrying one of these fold-up shovels. And every so many feet, they would dig about a hole about a foot deep into the ground. They would take a sensor out of the backpack, bury it in the ground, and then continue zigging back and forth on their particular side of the mountain. At the same time, there is another surveillance group that's over in the town of Marion, which is east of Mount Mitchell, and at nighttime they saw a train being unloaded, and what was being unloaded was 20 to 25 tanks, and the tanks were being put on flatbed trucks and then driven up Mount Mitchell. Well, the trucks never ever came down again, and the people who trained this particular squad leader, who we call Hawk,
mm-hmm.
had told him that the facility beneath Mount Mitchell is 20 stories deep.
Mm.
And there are people within our military, within the U.S. military, that are very concerned about what's going on. And that's why the surveillance was going on.
So the U.S. military was not working with the U.N., is that right?
No, they were surveilling them.
Well, these UN people that you refer to with blue hats, are they like this foreign group of people, or are they Americans? Is it the American faction of the Blue Hats?
Well, they're UN, so they could be from anywhere. And, of course, if you see people all dressed in the same kind of uniform, it's pretty hard to tell where they're from.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, in an area just to the northwest of Mount Mitchell, the same man was doing a surveillance mission back in just about a year ago, and it was an ISIS cell group that they were following. And the part of his story that kind of really, you know, gave me the creeps was that they had to follow the leader of this one particular cell, and it was a woman, and she would go to church on Sunday mornings.
Oh.
Which gives you an idea of the extent of, camouflaging themselves.
That takes my breath away. I hadn't heard that, because the ISIS camp I did want to bring up on the second half of the show. Before we get to clarify, the U.S. military was kind of spying on this contingent of UN people. Is that right? To find out
this
what's going on?
This particular squad, well, it was more than one squad, but yes, it was some aspect of our traditional military doing surveillance of this mountain occupied by the UN.
Wow, and you'd think they would know.
Now, what the ultimate plans are there, I can only guess at this point.
Do you suppose then those sensors, it was just like movement sensors, do you think?
That's right, and he said they were very sophisticated sensors where they would, who's ever listening to the recordings from it, can tell if somebody is a person or an animal coming up the mountain. So any kind of movement of the mountain, they're going to be aware of it.
Well, do you suppose, did this hawk mention to you, number one, had he been inside the facility? And number two, did he have any strange feelings as a result of the electromagnetism?
Did he or did it?
Did he personally feel it?
He never mentioned it.
He never mentioned it?
He didn't.
So do you think he had been inside?
I don't think so. But he did in rather, he expresses very strongly. But he talked about the entrance into the mountain being so well camouflaged that when it's closed, you can't even tell it's there.
That it looks like a rock face or something,
right? It would look just like a cliff face.
How do they do that?
That report from somebody who was hiking in Linville Gorge, and they saw the cliffside of a short-off mountain open up, and then, you know, it didn't stay open. But
Shocking.
They said it was big enough to drive a truck, you know, a big truck into.
And usually those are in such precarious places. How do they get machinery up there to do that?
I don't know.
It's mind-blowing. Well, Mary, we are at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have to take a quick break here. We're talking to Mary Joyce, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Tune to WSCA 106.1 FM in Portsmouth's West End. And Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. Visit them online at supernaturalmagazine.com. And from the community calendar, the Discover Portsmouth is a one-stop central gateway to events and historical sites in the greater Portsmouth area. The center provides all the information you may need to plan your vacation or day visit. Discover Portsmouth is located at 10 Middle Street and is open daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. April 1st through December 23rd. Additional information is available online at portsmouthhistory.org. And for some upcoming guests to the show.
All right, our upcoming guest list starts with August 29th, and our local storyteller and historian Roxy Zwicker is returning to tell us some more ghostly tales from the Portsmouth Seacoast area. September 5th, we're welcoming Billy Roberts. He's a paranormal author from the UK. And we'll be connecting with him to speak with us about his book, Ghostly Tales, Poltergeists, Haunted Houses, and Messages from Beyond. September 12th will be Richard Estep. He's a British import now living in the U.S., and he's an EMT who's written about his ghost investigative experiences garnered from both the U.S. and the U.K. His book In Search of the Paranormal, The Hammer House Murder, Ghosts of the Clink, and Other Disturbing Investigations will be the topic of discussion. And then on the 19th, we're welcoming Nick Redfern, and he's going to be speaking to us about the Chupacabras. And the 26th will be Ken Gerhardt, and right now he's got a TV show called Missing in Alaska, and he also deals with the research of flying humanoids. So that wraps up our guest list for the moment.
All right, and tonight, I'm going to go back to the phone now with tonight's guest, Mary Joyce. Welcome back, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you.
Now, is this a little bit better? Can you hear?
I can hear you a little bit better.
Okay, good.
But if you're not loud.
All right.
But it's better.
Good. So we were talking about Mount Mitchell. Well, actually, I wanted to backtrack just a second and ask you about what you were feeling, the results of the electromagnetism. Do you think that that is just a temporary situation that triggers when someone approaches, or do you think it's something that is a constant condition when they're doing something there? So do you think it's on and off, or do you think it's just a temporary thing?
You can only get into the Perry Center, I think they're open on Wednesdays. Otherwise, it's by invitation only. One of the retired Air Force men told us that once they saw a guard there in a SWAT outfit with the, you know, guarding the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect they can turn it on and off, because if they're going to open the doors and have people come in,
okay,
they probably wouldn't be running it. I think it's like an insect repellent.
Really?
You know, just turn it on to, you know, keep people at bay. And there's, you know, you just don't want to stay there when you start feeling that. And I've gone there a couple of times when other people have been in the car with me,
mm-hmm.
and they've experienced it too. So
truly,
it's not just, you know, one person who has felt that.
Yeah. Well, I know that high EMF readings can really make you feel unwell.
Nauseous,
it can make you feel dizzy, headaches. I mean, it can even give you hallucinations if it's bad enough.
Right.
So
I'm pretty sure that's what's going on there.
Yeah,
yes.
It's hard saying, not knowing. am I on?
Yeah.
Okay, my mic keeps fading out. All right. Mary, have you heard, this has been on the internet, that there are some tunnels associated with Walmarts and Home Depots?
I've heard some of those things. I haven't put anything like that on the Skyships Over Cashers website, because I want to have confirmation of things before I put things up. So I would only be speculating like everybody else is on the subject. I don't have a particular insight on it.
Okay. My next question would be, since these are national parks we're talking about, there's a man by the name of David Politis. I believe that's the pronunciation. He's done extensive research on people who have turned up missing in national parks.
Right.
So my question is, have you heard of many reports of missing people in national parks in North Carolina?
Nothing that has made the news, nothing that anybody has come to us to tell us about it.
Nothing stands out.
I am familiar with him and you know, his reporting on things like that. I wouldn't be surprised, but I have not gotten anything personally regarding that.
Okay.
Now, I will. Can I tell you what I did today, because I'm still excited about it?
Yes, please.
I think you're aware that we had a story, a pretty good story, about...
the hair?
Titled about the Bigfoot.
Yes.
And we sent off a hair sample. And we haven't gotten results back yet. But,
oh, darn.
Today I've been out tromping in the woods all day around one of the high mountain areas. And a man who has, he's like the third or fourth generation mountain man. And he took me back into the woods where there are caves in an area where he has he has seen footprints of Bigfoot. And while I was back in these woods, and it's really, really remote, it was very, very quiet. It's like this dense, quiet forest.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we approached the place where the caves are, where he says that, you know, they seem to seek shelter there, There was this sound which didn't sound like any bird I'd ever heard, but there was this one sound that was kind of bird-like, and then there was a response to it not too far away from there, and then we never heard it again. But we had the feeling that the Bigfoot was there announcing that we were coming.
Oh.
And I wanted to go back there to at least get a picture of the cave, which I did get, and I will be posting that on the website.
Oh, terrific.
There's just, if anybody's at all interested in Bigfoot, go to the Skyships Over Cashers website, and we have a heading on the homepage called E.T., Bigfoot, and Other Beings. And just scroll down a little bit. The title of it is called Valley of the Bigfoot and the Little Alien Dude. And I will be updating that within the next week or two from what I was able to find today. And as soon as we get DNA results, that will be posted also.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I'm anxious to hear about that.
Yeah.
I saw that long
clump of hair. Want to know how that one turns out, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know if you wanted to get into Bigfoot at all tonight.
No, I just wanted to let you know that simply because I actually heard the sounds and actually got a picture of the cave. And I just got home about an hour before.
Oh, excellent.
So it's still very, very fresh in my mind.
Yeah. Well, since you were there, I've got to ask you this. Do you feel, especially if you were approaching respectfully, do you feel that they're really aggressive if they're not being aggressed?
Do I feel like they're aggressive? Is that what you're asking?
Right. Do you feel they're aggressive for no reason?
The people involved with the first article that I wrote, I've talked to them since then and talked to them also today.
Mm-hmm.
And they have kind of mellowed out a little bit. They are convinced that the Bigfoot will not harm them. Might scare them a little bit, but it won't harm them. And they said that this one area that we were in today, they felt like there was a much more mature group or clan that lived there. And several ridges over, which is where we wrote about the first time, they felt like it was almost like the younger Bigfoot were acting like adolescents, it's a total different energy.
You're referring to the one where there's the horse farm and the two houses?
Right, uh-huh.
So you think that those were a group of adolescents?
That's what the people that live there think. And because they say the ones that are in the woods where I was today are much, they just seem to be more mature.
Yeah.
I can actually use that word. So they're mellowing. And the first time that I went to the first valley, the guy had a gun with him at all times. And today we're, going off into the woods, and all he had was a machete to cut down the brush.
Whoa, well, that's good news.
Since we've brought up Bigfoot, what is your opinion, the theory that Bigfoot possibly interdimensional?
Put you on the spot. They seem to show up quite often in the same areas where there are UFOs.
Hmm.
So there might very well be a connection. That's kind of hard to prove other than the fact that they're being seen sometimes in the same area. So that might be a connection. They also are simply just good at camouflage. So maybe they're not just going into a state of invisibility. Maybe they're simply really good at camouflaging in their back in the trees and so forth. I don't have an absolute answer on that, and I've heard both sides of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what if you had an opinion on it.
Yeah, the newspaper part of me won't...
won't commit yourself.
Right.
Speculation, I try to present what I'm actually able to find.
Yes, stick to the facts, only the facts.
Only the facts, ma'am. it seems that the group, the couple and the two children that I believe it's Fred that interacts with, and he works in his garden and he gives him some fruit and vegetables.
Now that's a whole different thing. Now that goes back a couple of years ago that I wrote that article, and that's really a very positive thing.
Yeah,
the fear aspect is totally gone.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was bringing that up because they didn't seem at all aggressive. Reserved, perhaps, but not aggressive.
Right. And it's only the male that the male would come down and when this man was gardening, and he would share things from the garden with them.
That's great.
And he would put his leftover food out for them. But there was no interaction with the female or with the
children.
Two younger ones.
Yeah.
Other than to see them on his property.
Yeah. That's really neat.
And his property is right up against a mountain that's totally undeveloped, and it's a national forest.
Another national forest.
And that's obviously where they spend most of their time. But the very first time that he really, really paid attention was it sounded like two children playing in the water in a stream that's about 30 feet below where he lives. And it probably was the two young adolescents because there's no children where he lives. The road to his house is an old logging road, so it's very, very remote.
Oh, I wish I could have heard their voices.
I know.
I wonder what they sound like.
Yeah, I wonder what it sounds like to hear two juvenile Bigfoots playing, you know.
Sound like human kids.
Yeah.
Well, then, since we were talking about military bases, there are several different theories out there as to why there seems to be an acceleration in the construction of them. What do you think is going on, Mary?
Well, one thing is, all the underground facilities, going back to the oldest one I know of, which is up near the border of West Virginia and Virginia, I think it's the Greenbrier Hotel,
mm-hmm.
and that's now open to the public, so that's how out of date it is. But there was a secret wall in the hotel, and it went to this underground facility where mm-hmm. the elite from Washington would go to in case there was a nuclear war. I think that these facilities are being or have been constructed as survival places for, again, those that are well-connected. I somehow doubt that if there's a disaster, they'll let the three of us get in.
Yeah, I know.
So I think that's a major, major possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get into the dark side of things, and you hear more about this out west, but some of this experimentation,
mm-hmm.
With different life forms, interactions with aliens, I sometimes suspect that at some of these sites, the guys who aren't so good on our side and the ones that aren't so good on the other side are teamed up together.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hey, are you familiar with Phil Schneider?
No.
He's a gentleman who was a geologist for the U.S. government, and they used to drill holes, drop him into the ground so that he could take soil and rock samples because they were looking for the right type of rock to tunnel using that huge tunneling machine.
Mm.
And he claimed that he was dropped into one tunnel where there were already ETs in there.
Oh, well. And he saw them?
Not only did he see them, there was a war. It was called the Dulce Wars.
Oh, Dulce. The worst stories in the world are from there.
From Dulce, I know. So it's just
a nightmare.
I'm not aware
of anything to that extent. And if it is happening, it would be at the Perry Center.
Really? Okay. What about...
By the way, for your listeners, the book has lots of photos in it and location maps.
Oh, good.
So that you can see, the roads closest to where these places are. Anything I have been writing in the last couple of years, I really do it in magazine style, so you get photos and words. And I try to write in my old newspaper style, which is trying to be as succinct and to the point. People are so busy today, they do not want to take the time to wade through a lot of stuff to get to the nucleus of a story,
mm-hmm.
and I try to make it easy for people to get to the good stuff.
And will you also leave the links there, too, if people want to read more in depth, and that's great.
Right.
And I think it's really nice. Well, what about that ISIS camp, then? If you want to touch on that, do you feel that that's connected with any of these military bases?
Oh, the fact that it's so close and may even be on UN land, the one that we're telling you about,
mm-hmm.
does make you wonder. the man who I call, or we named Hawk, he, in addition to following this one cell group, which was five people, which seems to be about the size of the cells when you hear about other locations, he also was involved with surveilling a training camp for ISIS. Mm. And he said it was like a little Daniel Boone fort in a very isolated, narrow little valley. And it had the barbed wire around the edges of it. And he observed people who were speaking Spanish, French. Let's see, what else? Actually saw somebody with a swastika band on the arm.
Really?
And the UN. He said that, you know, it's like cells would arrive to be trained, and then whoever came in, another group would come out. He would not pinpoint where this was because he said he was afraid people would try to find it.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to put people in jeopardy.
Okay, so if he's working for the U.S. military, then who the heck is running these camps? Do you think it's affiliated with the U.N.?
There were blue hats in that group.
Mm. Because if a faction of the government knows about it, then why isn't something being done, or is something being done? It's not the only camp either. There's supposed to be like 117 across the nation.
It's not the only one. No, that's true.
So
I don't know. The fact that our own military people are observing this, I don't know. Are they preparing for something?
Yeah,
it sounds that way.
I'm just thinking, what kind of chance do we have if ISIS is training right here in our own country?
On our ground.
And our government knows about it.
I know.
You know?
I know. It's all terribly unsettling.
It is.
So if you
Very
want to
disturbing.
Talk about my book about the Cherokee Little People or Evidence of Jesus, we can certainly get off the creepy stuff.
Well, actually, we only have about 3 minutes left anyway.
It's something that's very uncomfortable. I think people should know about this. And I'm sure that's why you wrote the book. That was part of the focus, wasn't it?
People do know about some of the stuff that's going on in the West. It's not well known about what's happening here in the Appalachian Mountains.
Exactly. As far as natural disasters or unnatural disasters that might be something artificial, have you heard anything about this artificial asteroid that's supposed to be hitting us pretty quickly? Have you heard anything about that?
Did you say artificial?
Artificial.
Well, I can tell you this, that again on the website under Skyship Photos, if you scroll down for this year, there we have pictures of UFOs that began appearing over Cashers, and they look like asteroids. And we had never seen anything like it, but somebody was able to get photos, and they're not lit up, but there was still enough light that you can see it, and they do look that way. And people might find that very interesting to look at.
Do you think they looked more like
a
floating city, or just kind of a rock in the sky, small rock in the sky? When what was the magnitude of it?
It's a little hard to tell when something's in the sky.
Mm.
It wouldn't have been just a little rock. It would have been, you know, something where, you know, people could be on board and it would have eyes to it.
It's very disturbing because there's that. There's also the CERN, the European Center for Nuclear Research, where they've got the Large Hadron Collider.
Right.
Something is supposed to be happening with that this September.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, it makes you wonder, what the heck are they preparing for? Is it going to be something artificial? I think we're just about at the end of the hour, Mary. So,
I want to leave people with this advice.
Okay.
Listen to your gut feeling. You know, all sorts of things may be happening. If you follow your gut feeling, really listen to your intuition, you can protect yourself. Don't ignore those feelings because that's what they're there for.
That's a good message.
Okay. Yeah, very good advice. And before we go, Mary, I want to give out your website address and where people can buy your books.
SkyshipsOverCashers.com. And if you go to the editor's corner and just scroll down to the bottom of that section, there's information on the three books that I've done most recently.
Okay, very good.
And we didn't mention this, but you have two other books, Cherokee Little People Were Real and Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find.
And they're all available on Amazon.
excellent.
Okay, very good. Well, we thank you very much, Mary, for joining us again on Spirit Radio.
Yes, thank you for taking the time, Mary. We've enjoyed it.
You guys have a nice evening.
You too.
Okay, thank you. You too. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and there we go. Once again, Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, and that's it for another week. Craig Mosier and the Graveyard Shift is coming right up, I believe. I think I heard him out there.
Yes, he's here.
He's here, okay.
All right, well, good night, everyone, and thank you for listening.